So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time. Waiting for tonight. Oh.
So, take a look.
October the 10th, 1999, Way, we were blessed with the Heroes of Wrestling pay-per-view from Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, part of Casino Magic, and this is a review I have been awaiting for quite some time now.
Yeah, wow, me too. I have been awaiting this for a long time as well.
This is going to be the most action-packed review away of all time. We are going to review the Heroes of Wrestling card, which for many of you, you've probably only heard the name of it, but we're going to bring you the entire 2.5-hour broadcast condensed into this podcast.
This is our WrestleMania, John. This is it.
And who better to talk to about this WrestleMania than the Vince McMahon of Heroes of Wrestling, Bill Stone, who is the executive producer of this show, who I got a chance to interview earlier this week. We're going to bring you that interview, and then at the end of the show, we also have your feedback that we'll get to. But first off, let's get into it. Heroes of Wrestling, as I said off the top, October of 1999, it is the 10-year anniversary. And Way, we started with aerial shots of a Casino Magic there in Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, where they compared tonight's action to that of Hurricane Camille, which was a very apt description from Randy Rosenbloom and Dutch Mantel.
Yes, they compared this event to a deadly hurricane that destroyed the city of Biloxi 30 years ago.
And this was a pay-per-view that was probably going to destroy the interest level in professional wrestling of anyone that tuned into this pay-per-view. And I will say for the record that I do have the right to criticize this pay-per-view for all it's worth, because I was one of the persons that purchased this pay-per-view, and they got $14.95 of my money in October of 1999.
You actually watched this the day it actually
happened.
Well,
you see, I ordered this pay-per-view, and I watched the first half an hour, and then I fell asleep, Way, just as you did for Starrcade 1990, and woke up the next morning, and I had taped it, but never watched it again. I never put it back in to watch, so this is the first time I actually watched the whole show, and what a show it was. So we have Randy Rosenbloom, who I believe was Bill Stone, who I interviewed.
Really?
I believe it was.
He actually is Bill Stone.
I think it was, because throughout the show, he at times was referred to as Bill Stone by Lou Albano, and that was a bit of a tip-off for me. But
are you sure?
I am not 100% sure on this. And unfortunately, I watched this after I did the interview, or I definitely would have brought it up in the interview and asked him had he done the commentary, but I was not aware. They were teeing up the show, and they announced that it would be Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov against the Bushwhackers, and described it by saying, "This should be a good one." And then we go to the first match of the evening, Way, and we had quite the enthusiastic ring announcer who, I guess, put his own touch on how to kick off the night's action.
Tonight, legendary grudge matches will be settled once and for all. So throw down your toys and get out of the sandbox. Playtime's over. Because tonight, somebody's going to get their ass whooped tonight in here.
And didn't this get you excited, Way?
Yes, somebody's going to get their asses whooped tonight in here.
And he did it in such a authoritative voice.
This is probably the worst Michael Buffer knockoff I have ever heard. From the get-go of this show, you can tell it's going to be a classic.
And a classic was not was in store for us, as we got the Samoan SWAT team consisting of Samu and a guy that they called Fatu but was clearly not Fatu.
It was not Fatu.
And they were taking on the team of Marty Jannetty and Tommy Rogers, and we had a little billboard at the bottom of the ring. It's like 1-800-5-MAGIC-5.
Yeah. From the get-go of this whole matchup, the technical productions on this show were catastrophic. They announced the Samoan SWAT team, but they showed a graphic of Jannetty and Rogers. There were cameramen that were asleep when they cut to their shots. They had the camera guy pointing down to the bottom of the ramp, and then finally realizing, oh, Jesus, I'm on air, and lift his camera up. Samoan SWAT team's manager came out to cut a huge promo on the crowd in Biloxi.
I had no idea who this guy was.
No, me neither. But then Randy Rosenbloom informs us after a 2-minute promo that they're actually in Bay St. Louis and not in Boston.
How did I miss that? Cut a promo in the wrong city. Yeah. We had I gave out the Scott Putski Award very early in the evening to Marty Jannetty, who clearly thought that this was going to be a very big deal, and it was worth getting in shape for.
Well, Jannetty pretty much worked most of this matchup by himself. I mean, actually, there was a point when Rogers ran into attack, and he just seems to get into Jannetty's way. And, you know, Jannetty takes care of everybody by himself, and Rogers doesn't really do anything, doesn't even get a punch in there.
Dutch Mantel noted in this match that he can look at a guy and tell if he was partying the night before. I think most people in professional wrestling have that talent. And then Mantel also added that just because you don't see these guys in WWF and WCW doesn't mean they don't have fans. This is like an all-star game.
Yeah.
An all-star game way. The best of the best converging.
The commentary here on this show is equally as atrocious as anything else in it. Dutch Mantel, I know he works for TNA now, very responsible for the TNA Knockouts division, but this was a terrible, terrible performance from Hit This Guy and the Randy Dude.
The finish was my highlight of this match. We had a chair shot to Jannetty that Randy Rosenbloom called obscene and unethical.
It was obscene and unethical.
It then leads to Samu hitting an F5 onto Marty Jannetty, and Mantel popped huge for this finish just screaming, "I was right! I was right!" He called a booked pro wrestling match. Congratulations, Dutch Mantel.
He also says that the Samoan SWAT team can be proud of this win, and they can put
this on their resume.
On their resume. That's the first win ever in Heroes of Wrestling. They absolutely
We got the exact same note there.
Oh, yeah.
Then they went to a plug for their sponsors. Please go check out ScoopsWrestling.com. And heroesofwrestling.com, they didn't even give their own website top billing.
I looked up both these websites, and obviously they are both no longer.
Gone. Scoops Wrestling was a news site right around there, and is gone. We then go backstage. George the Animal Steel is being accompanied by the late Sensational Sherry, and they tease that there's something going on between these two, and all of a sudden, George pulls her coat and reveals her in a bra and underwear.
Yeah, this is
gross.
This is a vignette they shot earlier in the day in the lobby of a hotel room.
It was just left up to us to assume what they were doing in that hotel room.
Yeah.
That takes us to Greg Valentine against George the Animal Steel. Randy the Ram came out and cut a promo calling himself the greatest wrestling machine of all time and says that he's going to kill George the Animal Steel. And he's going to take Sensational Sherry.
Yeah. Why did you call him Randy the Ram?
Did you not see how he looked in this?
Oh.
He's a dead ringer for Randy the Ram.
He looked kind of like that. Sherry, in her pre-match interview, says, "In the wrestling business, you get to the top by your body count."
That's
very
horrible.
Appropriate.
That's disgusting.
Mm-hmm. The match takes forever to begin, and what was really of note is that it really starts when George the Animal Steel tries to pull his shirt over his head and is unable to get it fully over
his
head.
This was the high spot of the match, was
blinding
him. The shirt off.
Yeah, the whole match was booked around George the Animal Steel unable to lift his shirt over his head.
I gotta say, George the Animal Steel in 1999 looks identical to George Steel from 2009. I don't know how many of our listeners are in Toronto, but I was at Nuit Blanche last weekend, and George the Animal Steel was at the Bay and Dundas bus terminal for a wrestling show, just sitting at a table by himself.
Wow.
Looked the exact same, and I was going to tell him that, hey, I'm going to go check out Heroes of Wrestling tomorrow, but it cost $20 to go talk to George Steel,
wow.
So I did not partake. This all built up to a Sensational Sherry heel turn that the crowd was clearly not aware happened.
I don't think the commentators were aware
of it. No. I don't think there was good communication here. George the Animal Steel still had the shirt over top of his head when Sherry started attacking him. And then all of a sudden, Greg Valentine took out, I don't know what it was.
It was some sort of, actually George Steel had it first. It was some sort of
some object taped
in
like
tape.
Duct tape or something. And then he put it down the back of his pants so they zoomed in on Valentine's ass for way too long. So we get it. We know where the object is hidden and that there is an object. They just zoomed in. Then all of a sudden, Sherry just blasts Steele with a chair. Valentine wins, and the referee was fully conscious during all of this. The chair shot, the foreign object, and Greg Valentine not only won, but left with Sherry and did exactly what he said in his promo. That's what you call a babyface.
Yes. The turn was incredibly, terribly executed from Sensational Sherry and all involved. There just seemed to be awful organization on the part of the workers, the commentators, and the ref. And, John, this is only the second match.
No, and George Steele, obviously very upset after this. He started biting the turnbuckle and then threw chairs into the ring, and Dutch Mantel noted that this is a bad example to send to the youth of America. And it is.
There were a lot of kids there.
Yeah.
At this show.
I don't think you should be throwing chairs in a tantrum. We go backstage to a clearly wasted Julio Fantastico.
With no sound, by the way.
Yeah, there was no sound, and that wouldn't be the only time that would happen throughout this show. He cut a promo promising to win every match for the rest of his career.
All right.
Yeah, he was on the...
He was on a roll.
Yeah, he was really on the upswing.
He went on
some
great things after
this. Yeah, bigger and better things. Julio Fantastico against Too Cold Scorpio. Rosenbloom announces that Fantastico loves the ladies. Scorpio came out wearing the WCW championship.
A replica of the WCW championship. For whatever reason that the commentators did not point out.
I remember this title because a few months prior to this, he did a show in Toronto at Medieval Times where he wore this title. And I remember talking to him backstage and trying to interview him. And then later I found out that he was high beyond his wildest dreams backstage at that show, which might have been...
Why he had the belt.
Yeah, it was a WCW replica title, and he looked like such a nerd. Lou Albano came out for commentary, and my God, was Lou Albano atrocious on this show. He kept calling the announcer Bill Stone, which made me believe that it was, in fact, Bill Stone.
To be fair to Captain Lou, and this will be the only time I'm going to be fair to him, he could have just been addressing Bill Stone in, you know,
he could have been. He could have been talking about Bill Stone overseeing it, but I was not sure if he was calling the commentator that by mistake and was doing a gimmick name or not. So we are not sure, unfortunately.
But Captain Lou, just right off the bat, puts over this show like it's amazing.
This was trumping WrestleMania 1 in Lou Albano's mind. He was so happy to be here.
This is great. You're doing a great job, Dutch. You got the Scorpio. You got the Julio. This is amazing.
The Julio. Way, take us through this match, because all I wrote down was...
Well, actually, I wrote down, this is probably... I mean, at one point, I figured these two are pretty capable workers. I thought this could be the match of the night. Just as I start thinking that, Julio goes for a really fucked up plancha. He flips over the top rope, then lays on Scorpio on the outside for like a second before he finally decides to skin the cat and retry the spot again in front of everybody. Commentators weren't really sure what was happening. And it's just a mess. They fight into the crowd, but they have no cameras to follow them into the crowd,
so
nobody can see what's happening. The whole time Captain Lou is putting over Bill Stone. Billy, Bill Stone, what a great production you're putting on. All the while we're seeing all these technical fuck-ups. It's crazy. I don't know what's happening. The ref bump looked terrible. To top it all off, the finish of the match, Scorpio has a top rope finisher called the tumbleweed, which is a corkscrew somersault leg drop.
Mm-hmm.
He does it and lands completely, completely off target. I mean, it's in clear view of the shot. And here the commentators are putting it over. Scorpio lays on top of the guy for the win. And there you have it.
After the match, Lou Albano commented on the Julio, stating that in a couple of years, he'll be a 100%er.
Yeah.
Then again, Albano stating that's the greatest event he's ever been a part of, and for his efforts, he was named the commissioner.
Yeah.
Just on the fly, he was named the commissioner and reiterates, greatest production of all time. And then he started crying.
Did he start crying?
He started crying on the air. Backstage, backstage interviewer, Michael St. John. Interviewing King Kong Bundy, who, clever man, that King Kong Bundy, calling his opponent tonight Porcuzuna.
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 Yeah.
Horrible. We then go to my main event, the Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov against the Bushwhackers. This match received negative 500 stars in the Wrestling Observer newsletter on October the 18th of 1999.
Wow.
And to my knowledge, is the lowest rated match in wrestling history by Dave Meltzer.
Amazing. Well, considering what's to come, I find that quite incredible. There are a lot of candidates on this show.
Nikolai Volkov had a manager who resembled Stalin.
Yeah, this was 1999, by the way.
It was. Can you not be a little bit more up to date? I mean,
I understand it's a nostalgic gimmick.
I mean, a Middle Eastern foreigner would have made more sense. Someone accompanying the Sheik from Iran would have been.
Yeah.
I mean, the Cold War was very much over by
the fact that they actually plan to do more shows for Heroes of Wrestling after this just makes me so curious to see what they would have done with some of these characters.
Well, they do get into some of that during this match. Before the match, we had a demonstration by the Iron Sheik after Volkov sang the national anthem. He picked up these clubs and flung them around his head.
Yeah.
And I am sure that this is a very difficult process to do. If they were legit, I fully believe these were worked pillars that he was picking up. But visually, it does not look impressive at all. At all. It looks like you're picking up two sticks and just twirling them and struggling terribly.
It looks impressive for a 50-year-old. So now,
dude, Sheik had a baby in his stomach.
Yeah, I mean,
he looked horrible.
Basically,
and this was 10 years ago when he could still take a bump.
Oh, well, basically, he could barely walk by then. And you're basically, by doing that, it gives you the impression that now you're going to watch two 50-year-olds wrestle and be grateful that they can still physically do something. So now we get to watch a match between two 50-year-olds.
Sheik then just went on a rant on Hulk Hogan and Bob Backlund, I guess building to show number two, where they would bring in Hulk Hogan and Bob Backlund. Then out came the Bushwhackers, and Rosenbloom identified them as Luke and Dutch. Had to correct himself. He said the Bushwhackers have won titles in 26 countries, which I call bullshit on.
Yeah, well,
I don't believe they have won in half those many countries. All I have note-wise here, 3 minutes in, I've seen worse. 5 minutes in, maybe not.
Yeah, basically, Bushwhacker Luke carried this match. Bushwhacker Luke.
Oh, yeah, with that tremendous selling after he took a throat thrust. Oh. Was basically, Sheik was trying to hit him in the throat.
Yeah.
With a thrust. And instead, just pushed him in the chest. And Luke sold this like it was, like he had just been hit by a truck.
Sheiky is barely unable. He's unable to even bump for a clothesline. It's actually, he just crumbles into a pile and rolls onto the floor. It's a pretty terrible idea to let these guys wrestle, and it mercifully ends when Volkov inadvertently hits Sheik with the foreign object.
Yes, and during this match, Nikolai Volkov attempted a knee drop, and he almost broke his ankle.
Oh.
It looked painful. Sheik was about to have a heart attack. It ended, yes, with Sheik and Volkov getting into a fight, and I'm like, my God, they were going to build to this for show two, but then they made up at the end, and Rosenbloom ends the segment by saying, thumbs down from the fans here. And that's what I was saying 10 years later. Horrible match. I contrast it to Jenna Maraska and Charmel.
Yeah.
And it's very, very close. I will still say Charmel and Jenna, now that I've watched this, is still the worst wrestling match.
Really?
I've ever seen in history.
I find it quite surprising that Meltzer and even yourself would cite this as the worst match of all time, or one of the worst matches of all time, because
it was, you know what, watching it, it wasn't as horrible as I have heard it. Because I've never watched this match in full.
But, John,
I would still say Charmel and Jenna was worse.
But, John, the main event of this
very you're right.
card.
You know what?
Possibly. Well, we'll get to that.
Michael St. John tries to talk to Tully Blanchard, but then he was attacked by Stan Lane and thrown into a limousine. And what followed was my highlight of the show, was this promo by Tully Blanchard, which was just fucking awesome.
Been in wrestling a long time, and I've been out of it a long time. And I came here and I agreed to do this thing, the Heroes of Wrestling, and was looking to have fun and, you know, have a good match with Stan Lane. I don't do this for a living anymore. This kind of stuff here is... I am really... What I'm having is a flashback, really. I mean, we're talking about the intensity that I had with Dusty Rhodes and Wahoo McDaniels and the Road Warriors and Demolition and Marty Jannetty and Shawn Michaels when they were just coming up with the WWF. We're talking about taking everything that you got, everything that you are, and bringing it and stirring it back up. You know, I've been gone and just subdued and low-key, low-profile. But you know, Stan Lane, I'm going to tell you the truth. The only reason you ever became a world champion is because you were Bobby Eaton's partner and Jim Cornette standing in the corner. And you rode a tidal wave that you didn't build. Well, the Four Horsemen was a tidal wave that I helped build. And you're going to find out just exactly what a tidal wave is all about. Because I'm going to tell you, Stan, 10 years is bubbled up inside me. 10 years, all of a sudden, at one time, is bubbled up inside me. And everybody that's ever screwed me, anybody that's ever done me wrong, is all coming out. And Stan, the times and the feelings that I used to have for Dusty Rhodes have all just come to the surface. And the feelings that I used to have for people like Jim Herd and the people at the that signed the contracts with the WWF and WCW, it's all come to the surface. And I don't need to scream and holler anymore. I just got to look at my blood because you wanted to jam me in a trunk and make a name for yourself. Well, it's too late for you to make a name for yourself. And I promise you, Tully Blanchard might be a little bit older, but I still got the fire that made me what I was. And Stan Lane, you will find out what being a horseman is all about tonight.
Wait, this promo actually made me want to see this match. Yeah. Tully Blanchard, unbelievable promo, I thought. Mm-hmm. And the sole highlight of this show for me.
Yes, the only thing that was done well in this whole show from a man who had been retired for like 10 years by this time, right?
Yeah, he hadn't done anything since, I would say, he went to the Fed in 87 and then was released in about 89 mm-hmm. and then couldn't get back into WCW and pretty much just got out of the industry. So he hadn't done anything in a decade by this point. We go into that match. Stan Lane was wearing just a crazy, crazy robe to the ring. And then he did the Mr. Kennedy gimmick, basically, which I'm sure Kennedy saw this. And maybe Kennedy was one of the 29,000 people that ordered this pay-per-view because he brought the mic down. He introduced himself as the original Gangster of Love. Then Blanchard came out and had pyro for his intro. Jesus. Lane said that Blanchard is busy preaching in tents while I'm on ESPN doing commentary.
This was a decent match between two 40-year-olds. I mean, all things considered.
Considering the age, absolutely. Big Horseman sucks chant for the babyface. they tried to put over Stan Lane as this big sex symbol, and then they cut to women with bored expressions in the audience, yeah. But that was not done on purpose. You would think, for the heel to be saying this, you would cut to women being bored, but they were trying to put over that he's legitimately, you know, a big catch for these women, and the women could not look more bored.
I have a theory, John, that they hired, Bill Stone or whoever, hired just a third-party production crew to produce a show. And I have a feeling that that production crew could care less about pro wrestling, could care less about this show, and just basically treated this as a joke to have fun. Because there's no way these shots could not have been a laugh to the people in that production studio as they're shooting these. The girls that they found, they had the most blank expressions on their face. And all the while, Dutch and Randy saying, oh, they're mesmerized, these girls.
These commentators had zero credibility by match number 4 on this card. Another finish that did not come off well, in my opinion. There was a figure four outside the ring by Tully Blanchard. Obviously could not beat him outside the ring. Then he did basically a suplex where both their shoulders were being covered, but at the last second, Blanchard put his shoulder up, and it resulted in him getting the win, but total confusion.
Stan Lane thought he won because he was the one who did the suplex. Crowd had no clue what was happening. The announcers had no clue what was happening, and they just announced the winner. Bad booking, poor direction. And
Stan Lane looked legitimately pissed off. Backstage, Michael St. John, more audio problems as we didn't get the first couple of sentences, but it was only Jim Neidhart with King Kong Bundy, and they ended it by saying, it's getting crazy back here, which was probably the case, considering some of the cast of characters and the shape they came up to perform in. We then go to, we continue this family-friendly pay-per-view they've been pushing all night with One Man Gang against Abdullah the Butcher. There's a backstage promo by One Man Gang. Rosenbloom called this a classic confrontation. Butcher must have had his tights pulled up to his pecs. And believe me, he did not have any pecs. It was just his pec region. And there was color a minute into this way.
Yes,
this was a bloodbath.
Right immediately. Basically, it seemed like they knew what the people wanted from him. He just went out and just cut himself.
Brought out a fork. They were stabbing one another.
Yeah.
Abdullah had a manager named Honest John from Paducah, Kentucky, who came on to commentary and sound like someone who didn't get a role on Deliverance. He was horrible, and I don't understand why Abdullah the Butcher had a manager. Yeah. It seemed like guys would come out and get on commentary if they felt like it.
Yeah, pretty
much. It sounded like a gong show.
Abdullah was pretty immobile. He basically laid there bleeding while One Man Gang did stuff around him. Just a man bleeding. And then after a while, One Man Gang started bleeding as well. And this was actually a very, very bloody match.
And we continued horrible finishes as ended in a double countout. And then they attacked the security, which meant rematch, in my opinion.
I wouldn't even call this an actual match. This was not wrestling.
This was like a New Jack match.
This was two men waddling around the ring, bleeding in front of an audience.
This was every shortcut you could imagine of two immobile performers.
Two out-of-shape senior citizens bleeding and play fighting.
Yeah, entertaining. We then go to a poker game that happened earlier today with Captain Lou Albano, Bob Orton, and Jimmy Snuka. Why they would be playing poker hours before they were going to wrestle each other, I don't know. But during this, Orton was hiding cards somehow. There was an overhead camera. And Snuka got pissed at Orton for hiding a card, and they agreed that they would fight.
Albano was really, really angry about the hiding the cards. This was the basis of their feud,
yes.
A poker game.
Backstage, Michael St. John is with Lou Albano and Snuka. Albano cut his promo. Snuka just stared into the camera in a daze and didn't say a word. Then they went to Orton, and the camera zoomed in and out really fast. I had an epilepsy attack. And then Bob Orton cut a promo. Anytime Bob Orton works the word baby into his promo, it's already gold.
All right.
And that brings us to Bob Orton and Jimmy Snuka, the two cornermen from WrestleMania 1 way. This was epic.
Wow, that's it.
They cut to a kid who is absolutely in disgust and trying not to look at this. It was just a random shot of a kid, and I think you're right, Way. They were just having fun with shots.
It feels like it. This was an awful match from the get-go. They couldn't pull off many of the moves that they had planned to do, and it felt like Snuka broke his hip a minute into the
Probably
match.
Probably did.
Orton put Snuka into an armbar.
For 20 minutes!
I actually counted it. They stayed in it for 3.5 minutes. An armbar for 3.5 minutes. This, during this armbar, Snuka makes a bit of a comeback. Then Orton puts him into another rest hold. And this was, during this armbar, the crowd starts chanting, Bob is a faggot. This is a crowd comprised mostly of children and women chanting, Bob is a faggot.
I had to turn up the volume to make sure I was hearing what I was hearing. You would never hear this chant at any other wrestling
show. Not even ECW
would chant this. And here, these profane Heroes of Wrestling fans are chanting this of Bob Orton. This match was also highlighted by an argument between Dutch Mantel and Randy Rosenbloom over how well these two men know each other. How well they've studied one another based on how many years they've known each other. My God, this was... How did this match end? It was... Oh, we had Albano grab the legs of Bob Orton and then Superfly... Hit the Superfly leap for the win.
Yeah. And Rosenbloom says Superfly had to be 10 feet high for that. The thing about I noticed was that Albano could have cared less about this match. In fact, he left to bring the camera over to talk to the owner of the casino midway through the matchup.
Just
I don't
a
know.
Shameless
it
plug.
It was weird.
Don't worry, fans. This is almost over. We then go backstage and Jake Roberts cut this promo.
You're a casino. Everybody says, well, gosh, a casino, you should gamble. Let me tell you something, Hamble. You don't want to play cards with me because I'll cheat. Okay? I cheat. You want to play 21? I got 22. You want to play blackjack? I got two of those too. You want to play aces and eights? Maybe I got too many of those too. Bottom line is this. You do not gamble with me. The only time you should gamble is this. Listen to me. When you walk in a casino and you want to gamble, the main thing is you should realize this. To gamble, you must accept losing. I don't accept losing. And neither does Damien. Damien, my friend. My friend Damien is right here.
Damien?
You see Damien?
Yeah, he just stuck his
nice
head out.
Nice pile of snake, huh?
Oh.
You don't want to see us, do you?
Well,
let me show you something.
Yeah, that's
let
okay,
me show you no, I tell you what, Anvil. Go ahead, Anvil. Roll the dice. Mr. Cameraman, get your ass back up here. Hello? I'm talking to you. Get the camera back up here. That is not what you need to worry about, Anvil. The bottom line is this. When the DDT comes, then the snake comes out. Worry about the DDT. 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 Think about it.
A man of his word, Jake the Snake Roberts.
So Jake Roberts, high out of his mind, was still sent to the ring. He was scheduled to take on Jim the Anvil Neidhart.
Yeah. That promo is legendary in itself. The only intelligible words. You want to play 21? I got 22.
What does that mean? That means you lose.
You want to play blackjack?
Blackjack.
I got two of those too.
Then he pointed to Damien, the snake, and then was about to... he tried to kick the cameraman to get the camera back on him.
Oh, my God.
What a
God.
Promo.
This is turning out to be a legendary night.
Oh, it is. It is, for all the wrong reasons. Rosenbloom announced that Roberts has lived an interesting life and he's made some mistakes and was living through one, actually, right now.
Yeah.
They called Roberts a former WWF Intercontinental Champion, which he was not. Mantell noted, this is a historical night if you're a dyed-in-the-wool fan. And I agreed. I completely agreed. If you were a hardcore fan, this was a historical night.
Yeah. Jake walks down to the ring with wearing a t-shirt and track pants. Inexplicably, he walks back up the ramp to the confusion of everybody in attendance. Then he walks back in with his shirt off, proceeds to walk around the ring, spots... I mean, I'm not a very judgmental person, but this woman that he picks up was not good looking at all. He grabs the woman's hands, places them onto his nipples, and the woman starts rubbing Jake's chest in front of everybody.
I missed that, thankfully.
It was very weird.
During the match, the snake was climbing out of the bag. Robertson took the snake out. He put it between his legs. Ha ha. And then we cut to the crowd.
You got to play the clip right there.
Okay. Let's just let the announcers sell this.
Look at the size of that thing.
Look where the anvil is. He's about ready to leave and go up the ramp.
Well, I don't blame him. Well, Jake the Snake right now having a bit of a good time, I would say, with Damien out of the bag. Well, I don't know. How much venom is in that snake? Well, what do I know? I look like I'm some kind of snake doctor or something. How do I know? Wait a minute.
Look at that.
Vile. That man is vile.
Look at the boots. Do you notice the boots he's got on?
He starts jerking Damien off as if it was his penis in between his legs.
And the announcers are trying to push this family show, and the best they could do without sounding completely ridiculous... Well, Jake's having some fun.
He's laying down on the mat.
He passed out in the ring.
Making out with Damien.
Yeah, he starts licking the snake. At this point, and I can confirm this, they were going crazy backstage and didn't know what was happening. Yokozuna and King Kong Bundy were sent out, and suddenly this is a tag match. It's Yokozuna and Jake Roberts against Jim Neidhart and King Kong Bundy. Roberts is just fucked at this point. He's passed out in the ring. Neidhart and Bundy start beating the shit out of Jake, including both men hitting Jake over the head with a chair. Bundy scrambled his brains with a chair shot. They were pissed.
I wonder if they were trying to legitimately knock
They were probably
the guy
trying
out.
To wake him up. Then this miniature King Kong Bundy wrestler comes out and gets attacked and splashed by Bundy. Sorry, he gets attacked by Yokozuna.
Who was much, much, much bigger than his WWE days. He looked like, if it's possible, almost like twice the size that he was when he debuted in the WWE.
He was a big, big Bundy here. Bundy ended up just splashing Jake, and the heels win clean.
Yeah.
Afterwards, Roberts tried to put the snake onto the miniature Bundy. They turn away, and boom, they just... This is how the pay-per-view ends.
Right there, and little Bundy is in desperate need.
Wait a minute.
Of help.
Wait a minute. Uh-uh. Don't do it, Jake.
Oh, here comes the python.
Uh-oh. Wait a minute. There he goes. Oh.
He laid the python on little Bundy.
What if that snake ate that guy? What if he just started chewing him and, you know, the snake's got a big belly after about 10 minutes?
I wouldn't want to be little Bundy.
Yeah, it was basically 5 minutes of two guys working on a completely limp body.
We've heard the term working with a broomstick. This was the literal meaning of it, because Jake was completely unresponsive. It was just a corpse that you were... It was like a Weekend at Bernie's.
The finish... Exactly. This was exactly like that. This was just a really awkward match, because Yokozuna didn't do anything. Here's a man who was supposed to be in the main event, but he just comes out, stands on the apron for the most part. The finish comes when finally Jake gets the hot tag. Yoko comes in, starts stomping on who is it? Who's he tagging with?
It was Neidhart and King Kong Bundy against Roberts and Yokozuna.
Yeah, starts stomping on Neidhart a bit. Then Bundy starts attacking Roberts, who was not even the legal man, and he gets the pin. And you're right, John, it just dips to black. No credits, no sign-off, the show just fades to black.
I think they knew the fate of Heroes of Wrestling by the time this card was over. I went into this show, this pay-per-view, we should reiterate, and I talked to Bill Stone about this, did 29,000 pay-per-view buys, which is more than your average TNA pay-per-view does, which is scary when you consider it. I will say this, and I went into this show expecting it to not be as horrible as I thought. I thought it would be campy fun. By an hour in, this was a tough show to get through. It was a very, very bad show. They marketed it properly, I think, in that they got enough people to buy this that maybe they made some money on it. I doubt it, because they brought in a lot of names on this show. But I will give this pay-per-view a 2 out of 10.
Okay. Let's set this scale straight, because are we grading this for entertainment value?
Did you enjoy this show?
Okay.
When it was over, I mean, it's not always... match quality is out the window on this show.
Yeah.
But I thought I would at least, for campy, ha-ha humor, I would at least enjoy it. If this had been maybe an hour or an hour and a half, I think I would have enjoyed it much more.
Well,
but
John,
it dragged. And dragged.
I completely agree. I was expecting this to be nonstop hilarity. It really was not.
It was sad.
The matches were boring. Nothing. Nostalgia is really the whole draw of this event, and it really wasn't there here. It was sad. I give it a... Normally, I was expecting this to be like a 10 on my crap scale, but like even that, I give this maybe a 2 out of 10.
Yeah, this was bad. This is sad, but what's more sad... King Kong Bundy, Jim Neidhart, Jake Roberts, Bob Orton, Jimmy Snuka, One Man Gang,
Yokozuna.
Abdullah the Butcher.
Yokozuna.
Wait, not Yokozuna. Oh. Stan Lane, Iron Sheik, Nikolai Volkov, the Bushwhackers, Two Cold Scorpio, Marty Jannetty, Greg Valentine, and George Steele have all worked matches in the last year. 10 years later.
I thought you were going to mention guys who are dead.
Guys who are dead, it's only Yokozuna, I think.
Which is quite impressive.
For wrestling standards, it is. And,
yeah, everything went wrong with this show. The talent, the TV production crew, the crowd. Unfortunately, Jake Roberts would probably be better known for this performance than any other one in his whole career.
That's the one that really, really sticks out. This and Beyond the Mat, I think, are what people generally think of Jake towards. A very bad pay-per-view. I spoke to the executive producer of this show, Bill Stone, so let's go hear from that right now. It was 10 years ago this past Saturday that Heroes of Wrestling, one of the most remembered wrestling pay-per-views for the right and wrong reasons, happened from Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, and the man behind that show, the executive producer for Heroes of Wrestling, was Bill Stone. At that time, he was part of Fosstone Productions. He's now a part of CBS College Sports Network. And Bill joins us on the line. Bill, thanks for joining us, because the Heroes of Wrestling pay-per-view is a show that is well-remembered by our audience.
Sure, John. Thank you for doing it. It escaped me that it's been 10 years, but thanks for reminding us.
The Heroes of Wrestling pay-per-view, it's a show that when you say it to any of our wrestling audience, they instantly remember it, and it's almost taken on a cult-like status among wrestling fans. Is it surprising that, I mean, we're still chatting about this pay-per-view 10 years later?
Well, that's interesting. It was an interesting event to put together, and learned a lot from it. I wish I would have serviced the wrestling community better. It's something that, you know, it's not the highlight of my career, because our execution of the event itself wasn't as good as the wrestling fans deserved. But it was something that we put a lot of effort in at the time, that's for sure.
Now tell us a bit, Bill, just about the background of the show. I mean, how was this whole concept born?
Well, it really wasn't my idea, because I wasn't traditionally in the wrestling business. I had done several pay-per-view events, and I was an event packager at the time, which means that we put together anything from a sporting event to a concert, and we package up, produce it, and put it on the air. And at the time, the pay-per-view community, a group that actually puts a lot of these on, came to me and said, we really think that the wrestling business is very hot, very substantial, and we see an ability to put together another event. What would it be? And actually, you know, they put me in touch with some people inside the wrestling business, and there was just such a great affinity for some of the wrestlers from the past. And unfortunately, at the time, some of these wrestlers had been let go from the primary group, which at the time was the WWF. And someone convinced me, hey, why don't you put together a nostalgic show of bringing all these folks back for one more event? And that's where it came from.
Now, Bill, coming from the background you do in television and sports, were you a professional wrestling fan? I mean, what was your background with the industry?
I think everybody's a wrestling fan. You grew up in the 70s and you watched the syndicated shows, and probably caught my attention because even though I wasn't a huge wrestling follower at the time, we all remember back and to the days, and so many of those guys were still around, you know, led by Jimmy Superfly Snuka and some of those guys. So sure, that caught my eye, and there was such a great affinity. And when you actually, you know, one of the nice parts of the event, John, is when we gathered all those folks together in Bay St. Louis, what esteemed professionals most of them were, to get to spend some time with them and hear some of their stories. Heck, we'd have probably been better off sitting in a room and just listening to their stories for 2 hours.
You look up and down the card at some of the names on the show, and obviously a lot of them you guys were trying to sell based on name value. But at the same time, wrestling fans obviously accustomed to a certain in-ring performance that they were seeing from the WWF at the time, WCW and ECW. Were you guys aware of this going in, that what you might be sacrificing in in-ring skill, you were trying to make up for in name value to bring viewers in?
Sure, John, we knew that would be somewhat of an issue, but we thought that the nostalgia of the event, bringing these folks back in some very, you know, in some situations that they were comfortable performing, would be worth it. And I thought, you know, listening to the guys tell the stories and then getting back into the ring, they wanted to do it. And from the event, there were several folks that were up to the task, several of them. And then, of course, there were some that weren't. And, you know, where I take responsibility, and I think it was my mistake, is I probably had some people in the ring that shouldn't have been in the ring on that night. And, you know, no matter how much the matchmakers were pushing me towards it, you know, at the end of the day, that was our event. And I just wish that personally I had served the wrestling community better that night during the actual show, especially during like the last hour of that broadcast.
Now, the major incident on the show that a lot of people remember from that event was the performance, if you want to call it that, of Jake the Snake Roberts. Had to put you guys in a tough position. Here's a guy that showed up not in any condition to perform. You guys had still advertised him, and he ended up going out in the main event. Talk to us about your dealings with Jake Roberts that night.
Sure it was, John. But, you know, once again, I'm going to take responsibility for that. I mean, you know, Jake's situation didn't start that evening. And, you know, my group should have been totally cognizant of what may occur with Jake that night. He, you know, Jake has had a legendary career, and once again, he's a guy who's done a lot of very positive things in his life. So, you know, that incident was, you know, it was unfortunate for me because I hadn't dealt with Jake like that before. And it certainly put the event itself on its heels because we didn't know where Jake was going next. And that's not what the wrestling community deserved. It's not what our viewing public deserved. And so we candidly had to go to black and during that piece. And it's a shame because there were so many good things that happened that night. There were a lot of great things that happened the weeks up into the event. It's just, you know, we got stung a little bit. And, you know, I think we have to take responsibility, me personally, because this was not new behavior for Jake.
When you look at some of these names, George the Animal Steel, Jimmy Snuka, Greg Valentine, and the list goes on, a lot of these names, is it surprising that 10 years later, these guys are still working independent shows, very, very small shows? And to me, that's almost a bit of a negative on the industry when you see these guys who had big, big money years, and yet here in the later parts of their life, still have to be working in high schools and such to make a living.
Well, you know, I think it's negative and positive. I think you have to give some of these guys a lot of credit, John. They're esteemed professionals, and to keep themselves in shape and in a position to do what they do continually, I think you got to give them a lot of credit. Now, you know, with any athlete, do you wish that there was the right type of pension fund? Do you think there was the right progression for them to become trainers or on other sides of the business? Sure, the wrestling industry itself has never matured in that manner. But, you know, I do think it's a shame on one side, John, but you also have to respect some of these guys. And I think you mentioned a couple of them, like Jimmy and Greg Valentine, that, you know, are really great to the history of that sport. And you know, and are just fine people that can continue to do stuff.
I'm curious, Bill, did you get to see the movie The Wrestler last year with Mickey Rourke?
Fabulous. A great performance by Mickey Rourke. I'm sure that folks in the wrestling community come from all sides of it. I having gotten to spend time at a lot of those independent shows that I went to as we were developing this concept, some of that looked fairly realistic. And I thought that movie did a pretty decent job of showing not only, you know, the wrestling, but, you know, what some of these guys have to go through. I mean, on the road, you know, making it work for themselves, it's certainly not an easy career. And I think that the fans, are so loyal that they deserve a lot of credit for what wrestling is.
Now, in doing my research for this interview, Bill, one interesting stat is that this show did 29,000 pay-per-view buys, which, I mean, not a home run number by any stretch, but for those current wrestling fans out there, that's more than your average TNA wrestling pay-per-view. And TNA, of course, they have 2 hours of television every week on Spike TV. They're in over 90 million homes, struggling to hit that mark. I mean, looking back, I mean, that is a very, very good number for your project.
Well, John, you know, I'm quick to tell you the things we did wrong. And I have no problem doing that because I think we grow from mistakes we made in execution. But some of the things we did right is we put together a very nice promotional package. If you remember the tagline for the event, legendary grudge matches settled once and for all. It led itself to good commercials. And also, the one thing we did nicely is we priced that event at a very reasonable price point so that wrestling fans, and it was really our desire when we were putting it together, that this would be an opportunity for a father that grew up in the 70s on a Friday night to spend with their young son, you know, 12 and 13 years old, and not have to break the bank to spend an evening. So we priced that very affordably. I think the combination of a pretty decent promotion and a good price point led us to the decent buy rate that we had that evening.
Thanks a lot for joining us, Bill. I know our fans especially remember this pay-per-view very well, and it's a pay-per-view that, you know, is still remembered 10 years later. So I want to thank you for joining us and giving us a little bit of the behind-the-scenes of Heroes of Wrestling.
John, thanks for your time, and to all the wrestling fans out there, I wish we could have given you a much better show that evening, but a credit to all those guys who showed up and did it that night. Thank you very much, John.
That was Bill Stone, the executive producer of Heroes of Wrestling. And those were his memories. He admits fully it was not a very well-executed show, but he maintains that the promotion for the show was well done, and I'll agree, they got people to at least buy this, at least not a huge number by any stretch, but 29,000, which, to me, that should be the biggest sign that TNA Wrestling is a complete failure. Hmm. So that's my 2 cents.
Maybe they should bring in Jake.
Maybe they should. We're going to go to some feedback right now, Wei, because we do have some that we promised we'd get to last week. The first one comes here from Jeff King. Okay, before you guys shit on the Starrcade 1990 pay-per-view or put in the worst of column, I want to say that this is the one with the Pat O'Connor tag team tournament that introduced fans to a lot of international talent that would play bigger roles later on, like Norman Smiley, Conan, as well as bringing in Saito and Muda again.
That's true.
As well as putting the Steiner brothers over huge at this time. The Doom Horseman tag street fight was a favorite too, which was a crazy heel versus heel feud at the time. Yes, it was a plunder match, but one of the best done before ECW made a common thing. Yes, the Black Scorpion feud ended and he turned out to be Ric Flair, blah. But Dick the Bruiser's referee making a guest appearance was fun. I'll disagree with that. I thought he was really bad. And how all the Scorpions came out and got trashed by Sting, Bruiser, and Steiners was your payoff to end that feud.
Who cares?
Yeah. I was not a fan of that main event.
I do agree with that tag team tournament, though. It was a good glimpse of all the different styles around the world.
And the street fight, as I said last week, I thought that was the match of the show on that card. From Turk Ugazo. Hey, John and Wei, excellent work on Review Away. I love this format. It's even better than Ask Away. Your review of Halloween Havoc was the funniest thing I've heard in a while. I hope you continue to review cheesy WCW shows. They bring back a lot of memories, and you notice things that we all had forgotten and are really funny by today's standards, even though they were meant to be serious 10 years ago. Sold Out, Road Wild, or anything with the Dungeon of Doom should be good ones to review. I ended up watching In Your House on YouTube after your review. The Jerry Springer-style vignettes, as Wade described them, were priceless. Like Crush saying he's going to ride his bike up their ass while he revs the motorcycle so you can't hear him actually say ass. And please keep mentioning the sponsors of the pay-per-views, such as Stridex and Snickers. It's great nostalgia. Keep up the great work for us, by us, woof woof, Turk Ugazo.
Yes, awesome.
And we also heard from Paul Williams, says, I have the VHS release of Halloween Havoc 98, and WCW took out a couple of the matches and interviews that aired on pay-per-view, just like they did in the 80s and early 90s. Having finally seen the entire show, which is currently on WWE Classics On Demand, that was the definition of an overbloated show. He also then lists some other pay-per-views he would like to see us review, including Stampede 98, Sold Out 98, Fall Brawl 97, and Sold Out 97. And he also comments saying that the what we mentioned last week, the tournament in WCW involving Chris Benoit and Beef Wellington was the 16-team NWA tag title tournament that WCW ran in 1992. Mm. And he finishes off with, I don't want to spoil anything about the Heroes of Wrestling pay-per-view. All I'm going to say is that Jake Roberts was totally hammered during this match. LOL. And the last one from Jordan Ducharme is, I think the term five-arm is hilarious.
It is hilarious.
So thank you for all that feedback. You can always send it to John, J-O-H-N, at thefightnetwork.com, or Wei, W-A-I, at thefightnetwork.com. And you can join the official Facebook group of Review Away for any requests. Coming up next week, Wei, do you have any selections, any picks of maybe what we should look at?
I will look at whatever you throw at me, John. I mean, this it's... It's none of it's good, so I can't really.
Okay. I want to, in a few weeks, I don't want to do this next week, the next big one that is worth reviewing is Halloween Havoc 1995. This features a man versus man and machine versus machine double main event.
Ooh.
Where Hulk Hogan and Big Show have a wrestling match, but beforehand, they get into two monster trucks on top of Cobo Hall.
Yes, yes.
And that is only one of... I remember this pay-per-view, and it is ridiculous.
I remember reading about this, and I've not seen it, and I look very much...
So maybe the...
forward to it.
We will do that one the week before Halloween, so we'll do that one in a few weeks. But how about next week? We should let's think of one right now for people that are listening to this, so they can get in their feedback early.
Yeah.
What are you feeling?
Well, what do you have actually?
That's not an issue, really.
Oh, okay. Well, it's the month of October. We've been doing a lot of WCW. Let's go back.
Flip
to
it over to the Fed. Okay. They usually run their No Mercy pay-per-view in October.
You know what? Let's do a good show. I mean,
show.
We've done so much bad stuff, but this is probably the worst. It can get. Let's contrast it by doing a good show next week.
Okay, we'll do. You know what's
Wanna
a?
Do...
No, go, you suggest. I didn't really have anything.
Well, how about One World Collide?
Oh, that's a very good pay-per-view.
Yeah, you have that on tape. You want to do that?
Yeah, we'll find that one. That was presented by AAA.
Okay.
So we'll Oh yeah, you gave that tape back to me, right? Because it was on one of the tapes that we already did. So
yeah, it was.
Next weekend, When Worlds Collide, right here on Review Away. But before we head off, Way, we need a musical selection.
Well, this actually comes from a listener from Lithuania. His name's Artyom, and he actually sent this request out a couple weeks back, but I couldn't find a more appropriate time to play this than now. This is Alphaville, Forever Young.
Let's dance in style, let's dance for a while. Heaven can wait, we're only watching the skies. Hoping for the best, but expecting the worst. Are you gonna drop the bomb or not? Let us die young, or let us live forever. We don't have the power, but we never say never. Sitting in a sandpit, life is a short trip. The music's for the sad man. Can you imagine when this race is won? Turn out our faces into the sun. Raising our leaders, we're getting in tune. The music's playing by the wall. Stay.